Welcome to today's episode of Fire in the Belly. This is where we get to hear some pretty inspiring stories from some amazing people. You know, it's always an absolute pleasure to sit down, take time out, and have a warts and all conversation about their journey. I'm always intrigued by what it's taken for people to get to where they are today. And hopefully, in this interview, we get to hear some more about that. From this, my mission is to help people to find their own fire in their belly, and from that, to live the mightiest version of you. So without further ado, sit back, relax, and enjoy today's guest. Success is a process, not an event.
Hello and welcome to Fire in the Belly. Today we have myself, Mighty Pete, and we're joined by the Danny Levin. Good afternoon, or good morning for you. It's awesome having you on, Danny. I mean, it's we were just talking before the show there, the microphone is on the other foot, so to speak.
Yes, which is good for me because I have my foot in my mouth most of the time. So the fact that the microphone's on the other foot is great.
So is that a good thing to take the shoe out to put the microphone in? It's like, yeah, it's... The metaphors are flying and we're not 30 seconds in. I love it.
Well, we had a great time because you were on my show, Conversations with Strangers. I loved you to death. And then you invited me to be here. And I thought I want to just do that more so we could spend more time together than anything else that would happen. So
absolutely. Listen, it's an absolute privilege to get chatting to you again. So Danny, just for the listeners, tell us, who are you? What do you do? And where are you from?
Great question. If I ever find that out, I will be sure to let you know. Who I am and where I'm from is easy. I live in San Diego right now. That's the easiest thing to say. But people have been wondering where I'm coming from my whole life. So I've never really fit into the world that I live in. I've always seen it a different way and heard different things than most people see and hear. And so that's allowed me to see a different world than most people see. It's allowed me to participate in a different world than most people participate in. And so I've had the real luxury in my mind, in my point of view, of being able to be with some of the richest people the world's ever known. Not in their lecture halls, but at their dining room tables. I've sat with them and met their parents. I've sat on the floor and played with their kids. I've been lucky enough to call them my friends. And they've been kind enough to share their counsel with me upon occasion, and even kinder still to invite me to share my counsel with them upon occasion. I've had the same situation with some of the most inspired people in the world. I've been in the homes and dinner tables and floors with children of some of people that inspire millions and millions of people in this world, and had the same opportunities that I've had with the richest of the rich. But Pete, one of the things that's really touched me the most is I've also had the opportunity to sit on street corners with the poorest of the poor, to meet their families, to meet their friends, to sit on cardboard boxes with them. And even though the meals we shared, often brought by me, which would be a bottle of wine, a loaf of bread, and a big piece of cheese, were far less elaborate than some of the meals I shared in the homes of the richest of the rich, the quality of those meals that we shared together was no different. The depth that we got to, the conversations that we had, and to be given counsel by some of the poorest of the poor has really changed my life. And normally I share this story till the end, but if it feels right just to share it now. One of the people that's touched me the most was a guy by the name of Corey. Corey was a homeless guy that I met on the streets of San Diego. And Corey, when I first came up to him, wanted nothing to do with me. He saw me walking to sit down on the corner that he was sitting on. And he said, no, this is my corner. I own this corner. I don't own anything in the world. This is my corner. This is where I sit. This is where I get money. This is what I do. This is my corner. If you sit here, I'm not going to get money. You have to go somewhere else. Sit somewhere else. And I said, I don't want anything from you. I just want to sit with you and have a conversation with you and listen to you. He said, no, not interested. I really don't want anything. I really need to make the money that I'm going to make here. So I said, I understand. How much will you make in the next half an hour? He said, $5. I make $5 every half an hour. So that means, you know, in the course of a day, I make $10 an hour. I sit here 12 hours. I make $120. That allows me to do what I got to do. And I have people I have to pay for. So I can't afford to lose even $5 for the half an hour. So I said, here, do me a favor, put your hand down. And I went into my wallet and I took out $50 and I gave him $50. I said, now we know the next half an hour is covered. Okay. You're not going to lose anything. In addition to that, keep your hat out because you'll still make more than your five. You'll make more than your $5 if I'm here. And you just keep all of it. I don't want anything. I just want to hear you. His eyebrows went up and he said, well, this is interesting. Okay. I guess you can sit down. What is it you want to say? It took him about 45 minutes to really open up. And finally, after just sitting with him for 45 minutes, I said, Corey, you watch all these people walk by you on the street. They pass by you sometimes 4, 5, 6, 7 times a day. Tell me what you would say to them if any of them would stop. What's one thing you would tell them? And he said, Danny, you've told me a lot of stories while we were here. I want to tell you a story. Can I tell you a story, Danny? Can I tell you a story? I said, sure. He said, being homeless sucks. It's the worst thing in the whole world. I'm so ashamed and so embarrassed that I find myself at this age in my life sitting on a street corner with nothing to show for myself. Life has not been easy for me, and I hate my life. But what's even worse is the people who pass me by on these streets treat me like a thing. They don't treat me even like an animal. They treat me like a thing. But when you're not a human being and you're not an animal, people can do whatever they want to you. So people have walked by, they spit on me, they yell at me, they punch me, they kick me. He said, I was sleeping here one night and someone came in and urinated on me. He said, just the other day, someone threw a bag of human defecation at me. And I had all the human defecation all over me, and I don't have many things to change into or many places to wash up. So it was just terrible. And when that happened, I just lost all faith. I just lost everything. I hate my life. I seem to be hated by the people that pass me by on the street. So I decided I was going to go around the corner. The streets was dark. The corner right around this corner, nobody walks on that street. They all walk on this street. And I decided I was going to take my life on that street when it turned dark. Not 2 minutes after that happened, a man came up out of nowhere that I had never seen before and put his hand on my shoulder and said, how are you doing, brother? And I said, it's not a good time, sir. This isn't a good time. Don't sit with me now. This is not a good time for you to be here. It's not a good time. Just please keep walking. I'm not interested in talking to you. I don't want anything to do, very much like he had said to me originally. But the man didn't leave. In fact, the man sat down. And it surprised Corey because he was in a three-piece suit and his clothes were torn and dirty and jagged. And the man said, tell me, brother, what's going on? And Corey said, something happened to me in that moment that this important man in this three-piece suit was spending time, his important time, to want to know what was happening with me. And he said, I don't know what happened. I normally don't cry, but instinctively tears just started to form up in my eyes. And I just started crying. And I said, I told you, sir, it's better to leave. He said, no, and there's no way you're going to get me to leave now. Tell me what's going on. Corey looked at me and tears were in his eyes forming, even as he was recalling the story. And he said, Danny, you know, it only took 10 minutes of this important man sitting with me and listening to me. He didn't try and change me. He didn't try and help me. He didn't try and convert me to anything. He didn't try and do anything. He just listened to me. And in listening to me, I felt relieved. I felt better. So much so that I could never go around the corner that night and take my life. But that man has no idea he saved my life. I was hoping I would see him again. I was hoping I could tell him just what the 10 minutes did for me. But I never saw him again. So if I could stop people on the street corner and say something to them, I would say to them, take 10 minutes out of the course of your busy life. Go up to someone you don't know. Go up to someone who might need some help and just sit with them and ask them how they're doing and just listen to them. I went back to try and see Corey many times, but Corey was no longer on that street corner. I wanted to tell him how much his story impacted me. And I wanted to tell him how many times I've shared his story with people in boardrooms that I've talked to, in lectures that I've given, in podcasts that I've been on TV shows that I've appeared on, radio interviews. Every time I can, I tell Corey's story and I tell the question, the challenge that he made to people to take 10 minutes out of the course of your life and find someone you don't know and spend time with them. In fact, I created a show, Conversations with Strangers, and I closed that show out by saying, hey, take 10 minutes and find somebody you don't know and do that. millions of people now have heard that his story and have heard his request. And I wanted to tell him, Corey, you have no idea how much you have impacted the world, because people are now listening to people more than they ever have before. They've promised me that they would do that, and they're doing it. And I wanted him to know that, but I never saw them. So here's what I want people listening here to know. You have no idea what the power of your listening can do. You may never see the effects of it. You may never hear what's happened as a result of your listening. Just like Corey's never heard it from me, and the man who saved Corey's life that day never heard it from Corey. You may never get the direct feedback of what your listening has done, but I promise you this. It will change people. It will help people. Not because you're trying to fix them or change them or do anything, but just because you love them enough to take a few minutes out of the course of your life and listen to them. 10 minutes out of the course of a lifetime is not a lot to ask. Why don't we all make the commitment to do that?
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
What happens if we don't listen?
Look around. I mean, just look around. The world that I live in right now doesn't do a great job of listening. We have politicians yelling over each other. We have families screaming at the top of their lungs. If I can tell you another very personal story, can I tell you another very personal story?
Please, we'll be very grateful.
So you heard the story of Corey amongst the people that have changed my life. And it's interesting because of all of the really well-known people that I know and I'm friends with, they aren't the ones that have changed my life as much as the people that nobody's heard of. The other person that's really changed my life has been my daughter. My daughter just turned 31 and is developmentally delayed. She's not able to speak like you and I can speak. She's not able to communicate clearly. So when she speaks, most people don't understand her. So what happens when we don't listen is a perfect question for me, because I know exactly what happens when I can't hear my daughter and people can't hear my daughter. She follows a progression. And with me, I hear her somehow. I don't understand what she's saying a lot of the time, but more than most people, I understand her because I just know her tonations. I know her feeling. I know sort of where she's going, and I get it a lot more times than most people do. But there's so many times I don't understand her. And Pete, when I don't understand her and I can't hear her, she raises her voice. She says it louder. And to her credit, she sees I'm getting old and maybe I'm losing my hearing a little bit, you know, and maybe she has to say it a little louder. And to her credit, she tries. And actually, to her credit, every once in a while, when she screams it louder, she actually says it a little bit differently, pronounces it a little bit differently. And I do get something, but not often. Most of the time, she's just screaming the same thing I couldn't hear when she was saying it. And when she screams and I still don't get it, she'll tantrum. And she'll go into this tantrum it can happen in the middle of a store, in the middle of a restaurant, when we're walking on the beach, when we're talking, when we're at a friend's house, when we're driving in a car, when we're sitting in a movie theater, when we're doing anything. She'll just, with seemingly no preparation for it, she'll just go. Because I believe that the world should happen, speak, yell, tantrum, because that would be the natural progression. But her time periods are different. For her, that might take 2 weeks to happen, or it might take 3 days. When she tantrums then and doesn't get hurt, she'll end up attacking me. She'll try and come and rip my shirt or bite me or bite herself. This went on for about 15 years, Pete. She's 31 years old. And it didn't happen every day, but it happened enough days out of the month that I used to have dark hair. Now I have white hair. And I have some indication that that might be why this has happened. And I think I'm a sensitive, warm guy who's trying to understand people, trying to listen, especially my daughter. I want to understand her more than anything. So in the midst of her rage one time, she came running at me to attack me. And I said, Elisa, stop. We just can't do this anymore. You know that I love you more than anybody in this whole world. And you know that I want to connect to you more than anybody. You know that I want to hear the what, like your words are the most important words that anybody could ever say to me. And you know that. I just don't understand the way you're speaking. Do me a favor, try and talk to me without using words. Running towards me, she stopped mid-step. A big smile came on her face, replacing her rage. And in perfect English, she said, perfect American, I shouldn't say English because I'm speaking to an Englishman. In perfect American, she said to me, I am daddy. And I looked at her and I said, what the F are you talking about? Like, what do you mean you are daddy? How in the world are you doing that? And she put her finger to the side of her head like this. And what I realized is she was telling me she was putting thoughts in my head. She was telepathically speaking to me because she knew she couldn't speak with her language. She was communicating in the way she knew how to do it, which didn't take her language. It took her thought. And her thoughts were clearer than her language. And here's the thing. I knew that she was doing that because I had understood it. I had heard it. I just didn't believe that her mind was even capable of having some of the thoughts that she was saying, because when people don't speak, sometimes we think that they don't think. But she did think, and she could speak. She just couldn't speak with her words. So I looked at her, and I said, you little son of a gun, have you been putting thoughts in my head all this time? And she did what you're doing, but imagine 15 years of pain of trying to communicate to your dad in a way that you want him to hear you and not being heard, and finally him getting it. She just went into contagious laughter. And her laughter became so contagious, I couldn't stop laughing. And the two of them, my laughter became so contagious, she couldn't stop. And we laughed for probably 20 minutes, but it felt like 10 years. Pete, do you know from that moment forward, she never raised her voice to me. She never tantrumed, and she never attacked. Had this story ended there, I would have been completely happy, because I have a relationship now with my daughter that I wasn't able to have. I used to pray that I could just understand. I could just hear her for 45 minutes in the course of her life, that I would hear her for 45 minutes. Sorry, a truck's driving by. Now I can understand her almost all the time because she just thinks it to me. But I got a little greedy. I said, if this happens with my daughter, I bet my daughter's not unlike everybody else that I know. And I started to look in the families that I work with, in the businesses that I work with, in some of the government places that I work. I started to look at prisons and hospitals. And I started to wonder, is the same thing happening there? Are people speaking and not getting heard? And because they're not getting heard, they're raising their voices and yelling. And because their yelling isn't working, they're creating chaos and havoc in situations. They're having tantrums. They're being arrogant and defiant and trying to mess things up. And when that doesn't work, they try and destroy things. They could be blowing up a building or shooting people in a square or ending a marriage or trying to destroy the reputation of a doctor or a business or something else. And I said, darn it. We are all doing what my daughter's doing. And my daughter gave me the solution. We just have to find a way to hear people that we can't understand the way we are used to understanding them. And if we do, and I would say this to people, once I hear you, is there any need for you to yell at me? Is there any need for you to tantrum or attack me? They said, no. We just get frustrated because you haven't been listening to us, or people aren't listening to us. As soon as we listen, there is no yelling, there is no screaming, there is no tantruming, there is no attacking. And could it just be that simple that a 31-year-old developmentally delayed kid gave the secret to changing a lot of the problems that exist in the world today? And because of her, because of Corey, and because of my book, The Mosaic, I've been guided to start a revolution of listening, where I just invite people to find a way to hear what the people around you are saying. If you can't understand the way they speak, don't give up there. Look for a way that you can understand them.
Thank you for sharing that. It's beautiful. Why is being heard so powerful?
So I started my show 50 Conversations with 50 Strangers originally with the thought to give people the space to be heard. But one of the things that I found, because that was my premise, that everybody wants to be heard. One of the things that I found was, given the choice to be on a platform where people were heard, or holding a platform for other people to be heard, probably 75% of the people say, no, I think it's probably better for me to hold a platform for other people to be heard. I said, so you're kidding me. So it's more important for you to let other people speak than for you to get a message across? And I'm not quite sure if my findings are right or if my question was right to elicit the right response. Because when I delved into it more, I said, is it you just don't feel like you have anything to say and that the world listens to you and you do feel heard? Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I just feel it's like selfish of me to take this time to say my message. But I said, but it's not selfish. You have every right to be heard. Do you want to be heard? And they say, oh, yeah, of course. Everybody wants to be heard. And I asked them exactly the same question you asked. Why is it so important for you to be heard? Why is it so important for you to be seen? And their answers varied, but pretty much across the board. I love it. I don't know if you're hearing this. There's a street cleaning truck going past this, right? At the time where we're talking about how important it is to be heard. But it's frustrating when we're trying to say something and the noise around the world is preventing it. Not because we feel like we have anything that important, but everybody has a place here. Everybody has a purpose here. Everybody wants to feel that what they think and feel is valuable and important to somebody. And when we close off the avenue for them to have a chance to actually be heard, we sort of close off the right to be here at all. We were taught, I don't know how it was for you where you grew up, but we were taught little kids should be seen and not heard. What a stupid thing to be taught. And so we started to believe it's selfish of us to think that we should speak, we should always just listen to people. But listening to people is great. But it's only half of the conversation. In order to have a real conversation, you listen and you're listened to. And it creates then a momentum that we then change the world. Because as much as I want to hear what you have to say, if I say to you what I want to say, we might be able to find things that we never saw before, that we now create solutions to things we never thought were solutionable. I don't know if that's a real word, but I like it. Does that make sense?
It does. Do you feel heard?
Yeah, now I feel heard. I had somebody ask me that question when I first started in my work of creating a revolution of hearing. And they said, Danny, I always find when people start some work, it's because they felt that they didn't have that in their life. And do you feel that was true for you? I said, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in a beautiful family. I had one of those great families where the dad and mom love each other, where mom works hard, dad works hard, but they come together. There was dinner on the table. We sat around the table and had dinner. And my dad, I grew up in the time where television wasn't even popular or wasn't really out. He had listened to the radio, and my dad was a singer and liked to sing. He was a boxer also. He liked to box, but he was a singer and liked to sing. And so he would put on the radio and sing Nat King Cole songs. And my mom would like swoon, like she was the adoring women in the audience. And we would just sit there and make fun of them and tease them. But when I hear how families grow up now and abuse and pain and separation and all the things that happen, there's a part of me that just wishes I could put people into our family situation. We were poor. We didn't have a lot of money, but we made up for the lack of money with lots of love. And it was beautiful. And maybe I romanticize it a little because they passed away when I was a kid. Maybe it's a little bit more romantic than it actually is. But it's still my memory of what was. So I felt heard for as long as they were around, but then they were gone. And I couldn't hear a solution to why my dad, who was my idol, he was my everything, why a boy would lose his idol for no apparent reason. And I just couldn't make sense of it. I couldn't hear an answer that comforted me. And so I didn't feel heard in my question. When I told my friends how I felt, they loved me and they commiserated me. My friends' parents took me in and tried to treat me as if I was their own kid. But they could never hear what I heard because they never went through the experience I went through. They can never hear the pain of a little boy who loses his dad for no reason, and then who loses his mom 2 years later on the same day. I didn't even hear myself until I wrote The Mosaic, which is the book over my left shoulder. It was in writing that story that I actually told the story of that little boy who lost his parents 2 years apart on the same day and asked the adults where his parents were, and they told him they were in a place called heaven. And my life, I realize, has been about that search for that place called heaven. And just talking to people and asking them and listening to them and trying to hear them and try to have them hear what I'm asking and the anguish of my pain that drives me to search for a place called heaven. And never really feeling heard. But I feel heard now. And it's actually really interesting. It's almost so... what's the word? It's the opposite of what I would believe. It's in the process of me listening to other people that I actually feel most heard and most seen. Because what it's brought out in me is this beautiful, warm, compassionate man who just loves and adores people, which is really who I am, without my masks on and without my walls up and without all that stuff going on. And people have seen me and heard me and noticed me. And people are writing me and saying, I listened to some of your shows and I just can't tell you what it did to me, what happened to me as a result of just hearing you and seeing you. I mean, I look like a homeless Santa Claus or something. So it can't be that they're relating to this form. It's not, but there's something in the energy of that, that I feel heard. And I also feel that I've started to understand what it means to listen to my own voice. I think we don't feel heard because we don't listen to our own self. But everything, the beauty of this life is everything in the world is talking to us. Our businesses are talking to us. Our bodies are talking to us. The earth is talking to us. The situations that happen in a moment to moment. I was just on a podcast and the guy was interviewing me and there was a fly that kept landing on his cheek. He kept landing on his cheek and I thought, why is this fly landing on his cheek? And he said to me, how is it possible that you can get people to a place where they're just willing to change and they're ready to change? I said, well, take a look at that fly that keeps landing on your cheek. Do you want him to keep landing on your cheek? And he said, no. I said, well, let's put out some energy to say he doesn't need to land on your cheek anymore. He said, well, that's not going to do anything. I said, let's try. If he comes back, he comes back. How in the world it happened, I don't know. But the fly came back one more time in the course of an hour-long conversation that we had and never came back again. When you listen, the world's talking to us. That fly was perfectly situated for our conversation so that he could see when something bugs you enough that you no longer want it to be in your life, you say, stop it. And this world's a benevolent, kind world. It will cooperate with us. It's not in opposition to us. It's not fighting us. It'll help us to have what we want if we say clearly what we want. But we don't say clearly what we want. We say, I really want this. Oh, but it'll never come to me. I really want to meet this person. Oh, but I'm not good enough for that to happen. So we give a message, yes, and we live it caught in the gap between what we say we want and what we say we can't have. It's crazy. Did that answer your question?
It did, I think. what does fire in the belly mean to you?
Well, it's probably, I like to try and answer in ways most people don't answer, but I probably am going to answer like most people do answer, because it's such a visual image. If you think about what a fire in your belly is, it's something that burns, that's burning in the core of your soul. In the core of your being, there's something burning there. And if we don't listen to the fire that's burning in our belly, that fire will destroy us. For me, the fire in the belly is the wake-up call. It's what happens when we haven't listened to the whisper in the belly, when we haven't listened to the gut speak. It's that almost the third stage of my daughter's, it's the tantrum. It's past the scream. When we have to light a fire in our belly, or when the world has to light a fire in our belly, it means, dude, you better start listening, because there's something here that has to happen. And most people, maybe I did answer it a little different, because most people will say it's that passion that drives you to do what it is you feel like you have to do. I think we have that passion without a fire in our belly. When it gets to the fire in the belly, it's saying to us, you're on the edge of harming yourself. You can no longer live your life the way you're living your life, and disregarding this fire, this purpose, this life, this thing that's growing inside you at such a rate that if you don't put it out, if you don't do something to make this, to take notice of this, it's going to get bigger and bigger, and it will destroy you. And maybe that's okay, because maybe the thing it'll destroy is the part of you that's resisting it. So I don't say that it's a fear, it's something to be scared of. But just know, when that fire in the belly is happening, something is going to die. It could be your resistance. It could be you. If you hold on to it too long, if you just hold on to your resistance, it will burn you down.
Do you have fire in the belly?
Yeah, I do. Because I'm still not listening. You know, as much as I listen and want to say that I listen, I'm way overweight. My body's screaming at me. I choose to come home and have comfort food rather than food that's good for me, because I want to fill my emptiness from talking to people and the pain that I feel in their pain. I'm an empath, so I feel people, and I just want to fill myself up. Comfort food doesn't make you slim and gorgeous. It makes you full and big, and I'm full and big, and I'm working right now, really in these days, because I have some things that are happening. Like I said to you, I'm an old man. You don't want to fall in love with this, but when people put out an energy that's kind and loving and considerate, and people feel heard and listened to and seen for the first time, they often misplace their compassion and their love. And think, boy, I want to be with that. I like that person. I want to be with him. Well, there isn't anything in him that you want to be with. This isn't something you want to be with. It's the energy you want to be with. And you can have that energy, and anybody can have that energy. But some people mistakenly misplace that energy. And I think I could go off the deep end. I'm a happily married man. But no, man, I used to campaign, and I used to be in a part of our yoga community. And I was a minister in a yoga community. And I spoke about how can anybody in their right mind have an affair? Like, when we get married, and we say the vow, and how could we ever go against that? And lo and behold, a woman walked past me, and she didn't walk past me, she walked through me. And she stopped. I never saw her before. She stopped and looked at me like, what the hell happened? Because part of her DNA remained in me and part of mine went into her. And we both felt it. And I said, I don't know who you are or where you come from, but like, just keep walking. I'm a married man. I'm completely against the idea of anything happening outside of my marriage. I'm happily married. I don't want anything to happen. That was the fire in the belly that went, that burned and destroyed me. Because what happens for me is when two core values, my problems exist when two core values go face to face in combat. I had a core value of integrity, that I'm a man of integrity. I only do things that have integrity. And I have a core value of really wanting to be loved. And as much as I loved my wife and she loved me, there was something missing. There was the fire in that. The fire in that wasn't there. And this woman walked by and ignited every cell in my body. And so I lost both ways. I lost, if I stayed in my integrity, I would have lost this fire that was there. And if I went out of integrity, I lost my integrity. If I went and I could have said, hey, well, why don't you break up with your wife? Well, I love my wife. It wasn't like I didn't love my wife. I didn't want to make a decision to leave my wife. But I didn't know what to do in this situation. So I ended up, after months and months, 8 months of trying to push it away, we ended up having an affair. And I felt like I lost my integrity. And that, you can see, this is not anything that's all that attractive. I defined myself by the fact that I had integrity. And now I didn't have integrity. So I lost my definition of myself. And it was only really about 5 years ago that I realized a man of integrity doesn't not make mistakes. He falls down also. But he admits what his mistake is. He calls it out and he says, I learned from you my mistake. And I have the courage to stand up to you again. And if you trip me up again, you'll trip me up again. But I have the courage to say to you in full integrity, I see you now. I know who you are. And I will stand to try and defend my integrity no matter what happens. And I haven't walked into that place. But I think part of my girth is I'm nobody. And if people are starting to see something in somebody who's a nobody, what happens if I make it easier for them by being more attractive? Will I have the courage to stand up to that again? Maybe, maybe not, but I don't think I can arm myself and stay too heavy to see if that's happening, because I don't think they're falling in love with the body. I think they're falling in love with the energy, and the energy will be there no matter what the body looks like.
Is it any of your business what they think?
I know the traditional answer is no, but yes. And I'll tell you why. Because as separate as we appear, we're not separate. We're all connected. And what you think and what I think affects what you think and what I think. And we can say, no, I can't control what you think, and I have no right to tell you what to think, and I have no right to do, and I shouldn't let what you think affect me. That's part of my old paradigm. I would have said to you 5 years ago, I would have said, oh God, no, I mean, I can't do any of that. But what I'm feeling is, in through this work that I'm doing, it's like I said, people who don't know me from thousands of miles away are feeling me. And it's changing something in them. I'm not even trying. It's not like I'm thinking about them and changing them. It's not like I'm doing anything. It's just the sheer presence of my presence is having an effect on somebody. Well, if that's what's happening, then I have a responsibility to make sure that presence is as clean and as possible. Can I share a very intimate story?
Please do.
And this is very current. In the process of opening up in Eastern religions, in the teachings of yoga, there's seven energy centers in the body. They go from the root to the sacral center, to the where the sexuality is, to the solar plexus, to the heart, to the throat, to the point between the eyebrows, and to the top of the head. When every one of those energy centers is open, there is a rush of energy that comes through the body that is unimpeded and is beautiful. I never talked about the chakras before. even though I was a yoga minister. I never talked about them. I never understood them. I never thought in my life about them. All of a sudden, they become very prevalent in my life. And I'm feeling people as I'm speaking to them. I'm feeling places where they're blocked. And I'm starting to say, you know what? One of the things that's happened in my room is when I hold the space for people to be safe and protected and loved and accepted, everything that they're not falls away and who they are starts to emerge. And I'm watching people emerge and feeling uncomfortable with this new rush of energy that they're feeling. Well, the root center is the earth. It's how we ground it in this earth. The sacral center is what most people think of as sexuality. It's also creativity. The same energy that creates intercourse and creates a baby is the same energy that creates books and projects and works and all sorts of things. So creative energy isn't always sexual, but sexual energy is always creative. Okay? So as people go into that second center, third center, the solar plexus is power. So the places that give people the most troubles are the second and third places, their sensuality and their power. So I'm in the process of going, I'm going to make a guided meditation tape on this just to guide people through it. When your feet are rooted in the ground, like when you allow yourself to really extend your energy down into the ground and feel the beautiful, luscious coolness of the earth. I'm not talking about tepid, arid earth. I'm talking about Garden of Eden earth. When your feet go into that earth and you get grounded in the power of and the feeling of that earth, and you're connected to that earth, and then that earth connects to the sensuality of your creativity, which most people call sexuality. The coolness of the earth meets the fire of your passion. And that dance causes a lot of people problems. Most people either explode with passion or most people allow the coolness of the earth to shut off their passion because they feel if I'm grounded in this relationship, I can't feel this passion. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm exploring with these energies with people. And so people are starting to write me and say to me, I haven't even talked to them. They're starting to tell me that they're experiencing orgasms in the second chakra as a result of hearing some of the things that I'm saying. That is as far away from my intention of what I'm trying to create in the world as possible. It sounds very guru-esque, and I can see why gurus have gotten into trouble, because if I have no intention of doing this, but they're feeling the creation, the creative energy, and they're expressing it as sexuality, and they're attributing to me because they think I've opened up that center in them, which is all BS. I didn't do anything. They've opened up that center. It's creativity, but they're exploring it. So there's a dance between the balance of the coolness of being grounded in your being, in your place here, the heat of the sensuality of passion and creativity. And then when you have mastery over those, not you're controlling them, but you're a master of them. You know when to use them according to when you want to use them. Then you come into your solar plexus and you can feel your power. You can feel this is who you are. You are now in this powerful human being that is showing up in this place that is mastering their senses and comes up in this place of mastery. Now you bring that into your heart center, that mastery of all these senses, the blend of cool and hot and warm, the blend of love and power. And suddenly you see it, you become a completely different human being. So I've been saying to people here, just I'm available. Like I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to see you. I'm available in so many places. Just come to where I am and take from me what you need. There's nothing here that you can diminish in me. There's nothing here that's mine, that is not yours. Just use this energy, because it's running through me and I feel it so much that the more you take, the more I'll be given more of it. So I want you to just take it so that it empties me and I'm given more of it. Well, people are having experiences. And so I'm waking up in the middle of the night feeling people feeling me. And normally I can see like the DNA of their person is there. But just a couple of nights ago, there were about 3 or 4 women who were involved in me. And imagine I'm sleeping next to my wife and I'm saying to my wife, I'm open and I'm saying to my wife, look, I don't know what's going on, but these people are here. And she goes, she's a saint, because she says, you know, like, I don't want those women in you, that you're mine. And then she understands, well, if this is your work, you got to do it. You're opening people up. I understand, but it's a little weird. You got to understand, it's a weird place. I said, it's completely more than understand. I feel more weird than you do. And so I started to try and locate where energy was coming from, because one of it was really rough and one of it was really sort of raw. And it felt like a woman who told me she was not going to do it anymore because she wanted me to be her man. And I told her that would never happen. I'm married. I'm not, like, I don't even know you. I'm with my wife. I'm happily with her. And she said, well, I'm not going to play this game with you then, because I want to do this with the person that's mine. So I said, I completely get it. Don't do anything with me. I'm not yours. Find that person that's yours. Hopefully this has awakened something in you that you can see now what you want and go for it. Well, she came back and I didn't think that it was her, because she told me she would never do that again. So the other 3 people that were with me, I'm trying to figure out who would do this. And so I just said, did somebody come and visit? Did you come and visit me last night? Innocent. And this woman, who was very refined and very sort of Brit, said, yeah, I did. And she said, it really opened me up. There was something amazing that happened. I said, well, this is really weird. I'm going to say something to you. I'm embarrassed to say this to you, but I'm going to say something to you. The movement was very specific. It was as if you were rubbing yourself against the shaft of my penis. And she got completely upset with me and said, I don't want to ever talk to you again. I don't want to do this. And I'm thinking, like, what in the heck happened? Like, I understand how inappropriate that was, because I didn't know that it was her. I was just trying to figure it out, and I learned a huge lesson from it. But this woman that told me she wasn't going to come wrote me and said, did you feel me last night? And I said, yeah, but I felt something. I didn't know that it was you. She said, I thought you knew the DNA. Well, I said, I ruled you out because you said you weren't going to come. But I said, tell me if you did this specific movement. I felt you opened yourself and were rubbing yourself up and down on the shaft of my manhood. And she said, well, I don't remember everything that I did, but I was using a vibrator and I was stimulating that part of you by moving up and down the vibrator, and I was visualizing that that was you. Well, I picked that up. And so when I tell you the world is not as it seems, when the mosaic tells me the world is not as it seems, how is it possible that somebody thousands of miles away that I've never met is having that experience, and I'm experiencing as if someone is rubbing on my chest, but they're not, they're using a vibrator to imagine me, and I'm feeling it. I'm feeling their imagination version of me, them doing it. Like, if that doesn't turn every listener you have off, I don't understand. Like, I can't even believe I'm talking about it, but it's so current to me and I'm so trying to figure it out. So I sat with my wife and we really had just a long conversation. Like, what do I do? Like, I don't have to go to that experience of the second level of the second chakra to feel that. What I'm going to try and do now is stay at the heart and just say, okay, bring your energy up to the heart. But what I've been trying to do is help them clean out those areas so that they can experience the warmth, the cool, the power, the love. And I don't know. I might just shut down my practice of doing it. I don't know what to do because I really hurt this woman. She was someone who said, I really want to work with you. I really like you. I really want to go into corporations with you. And now she won't even talk to me. And I don't blame her. Like, it was totally inappropriate what I said to her. But I just couldn't understand. I'm trying to understand this energy that's coming in a world that I don't understand. I'm trying to understand an ununderstandable world. And the reason I'm saying all this is not to say anything about myself. I'm saying all this that when we open ourselves up to energy, that we are energy. We're not these bodies. We're not these forms. When we open ourselves up to that energy will show us something and teach us something. It doesn't have to be sexual. It doesn't have to be even heartfelt. It doesn't have to be anything. It's the fly on the guy's cheek. It's what your business is saying to you when it's not doing well, but we don't listen. It's what my body's saying to me when it has pain in it. When I haven't listened to it, it's having pain in it to show me, hey, we want you to treat us differently. And so listening to me, as we go to all those energy centers, what are they saying to us? And how do we listen to that vibration rather than just get lost in it and let it explode? Huh, I didn't think I was going to go there with you, Pete, but there we are. It's Karen, vulnerable, real.
Do you respect yourself?
Yes. This is hard to say, especially after that story. But I love the man that I am. Like, I feel so honored and lucky to be living in this being of who I am. There are outward indications of being overweight that would make me say, maybe you don't respect yourself. But I don't think it's because of not respect. I think it's protection. After I had that affair that I spoke about, I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Santa Claus. Did you ever see that movie with Tim Allen? Mm-hmm. He's up on a roof, and suddenly he gets this card, and he becomes Santa Claus. And overnight he gains 50, 60 pounds, and he has this big belly overnight because Santa Claus is big and he has to have that belly. That happened to me in one night. I was 165 pounds, bench pressing 345 pounds, running 48 miles a week. And overnight, after I told my wife that I had the affair, I went from 165 pounds to 240 pounds. Overnight. I think it's just protection. I think I'm just scared. I'm a big, fat, scaredy cat. But I don't think it's because I don't respect myself. I know who this guy is. And I love this man that I am. I don't think that he's affected by his size. I don't think he's affected by... He is affected. There's one thing that happened when I had my daughter over these coronavirus days. We live on we have a two-story house. And because my knees have arthritis in them, and I'm trying to regenerate the cartilage in my knees, going up and down steps has been hard. So one of the most painful processes of me is I would always go and lay in bed with my daughter and read her books. And I couldn't go down the steps to read her books. And that made me feel like enough's enough. I got to stop this. And so now I'm spending my energies. Like, if I can communicate to people 10,000 miles away and experiencing orgasms that they're experiencing, I can certainly regenerate cartilage in my leg, in my knees. Like, nothing is out of possibilities. Nothing's out of the realm. And so what I'm realizing is it's only my mind that limits my thoughts. So do I respect myself? Absolutely. I love this human being. Maybe love and respect are different, but I think I respect myself.
The way you describe that, I mean, sounds somewhere between self-sabotage and blockage.
Wait, I describe what? Tell me.
Just Just in terms of changing on the presence, you know, you talk about my body and then you talk about me. And then you talk about, you know, the energy flowing through. And then obviously the, you know, what you've very openly shared. I'm just aware of this is the language shift and things like that. Does that make any sense?
Mm-mm. Paint it for me. Paint it for me differently so I can hear it.
What comes out, I suppose, is like as the energy is flowing through, there's a blockage. That's what I sort of see. Does that make sense? But it's a sabotage blockage is what it comes across to me as. What that's kind of what I'm picking up. But
so I have your outline. Paint the colors of it inside. What is the blockage? What is the energy place that you see blocked? What is the sabotage that you can see? Because you might be right.
I think in the words you've used and almost not wanting to go there, you know, wanting to hold back, you know, there's several sort of blocker words or phrases there that would suggest it's not a clear flowing, you know. The energy is passing in, but just apparently there's not all is getting through. And that's probably what triggered the respect question, and I wasn't quite sure.
I feel a little bit like I can't understand my daughter. So I would love you to say it a different way. I get what you're saying, but I just don't get how, like, I don't understand what you're saying, I guess is what I'm saying. And I would really like to, because I think you might have an insight that would be really beneficial for me. What is the energy that's coming through, and what is the energy that isn't going out? And what is it that you see that is the sabotage?
I think what comes across to me is restraint. It's a holding back through misunderstanding. Not misunderstanding, that's the wrong word, through just not being aware yet. But like, I suppose with your daughter, it's things are happening. There was a communication was there, but actually until, you know, there's the expression from great overwhelm comes great change, you know, and from that moment of her running towards you and that stop, that, you know, sort of build up of frustration, energy, etc. But then actually great clarity came from that. Yeah. And the way you described yourself in a couple of times there, you know, I mean, your connection is phenomenal. You know, because I'm trying to work out what's the next level to hearing, because hearing is just it is connection. I mean, connection is the sort of the parent of hearing, right?
I may say that the next step after hearing is action. And action is maybe, I'm not sure of this. It may be that we hear, we connect, and then we act, or we hear and we act, and then we connect. But hearing on its own without an action doesn't necessitate connection. But I think when I hear you and I act in a way that will either get you to understand that I've heard you, or I do something to hearing is a passive action. Action is an active action. And I think passive and active create connection, if that makes sense. So it's not only enough to hear somebody. I have to act upon what I've heard. And that action might just be saying to you, hey, I've heard you. I want you to know how important it is and how thankful I am that you just told me what you're saying because I hear you. Or I have to do what you are asking me to do. Or I have to say it. I've heard you, but I can't do what you want me to do. All those are actions And in those actions and in that receiving and giving, then there's connection.
But is action not a conscious behavior?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think in those terms. I think action, I think we, the whole world in my view is made up of an inhalation and an exhalation. It's receiving and it's giving. We inhale, the very thing that gives us life is our breath. So I see everything in the world as a part of that process. Hmm. When I listen to you, I receive, I inhale you. When I act, or when I speak back, or when I say something to you, not speak back like fight you, but you know, say something to you, then I exhale. And in the inhalation and the exhalation, life continues. It just builds momentum. But if I just listen to you and don't do anything, you don't even know that I've heard you.
If I take you back, you talked about meeting the lady on the street and the swapping, I think, of the DNA, I think was the expression.
Yeah.
Was there an action there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The action was to try and resist the action. So what happened is she walked through me. I received her. I spoke to her about the fact that we both looked at each other, which was the action, to say that we actually experienced the same experience. And we made a decision at that point not to act on that, which is action.
Mm-hmm.
But that decision to not act on it was caught by another action, which was how much we wanted to act on it, which was how intoxicated we were by the love that we felt and the passion that we felt and the feeling that we felt. But everything has, one of the things Mosaic says, is everything has the traveler in the mosaic says everything has a, if I were to ask you in life, what three things have to happen in every thing that we do, what would you say those three things are?
Love, connection, value. I don't know why that comes up.
Okay. We overcomplicate it. What the mosaic taught me is very simple. The only three things that come up in everything that happen is a beginning, a middle, and an end. How we define the beginning, middle, and end is ours to define. We can say that's love. We can say it's value. We can say it's whatever we want to say. But one thing is constant in every single thing that happens. It's the answer in the whole world never gives it. A beginning, a middle, and an end. The beginning of my time with the woman who walked through me was when she walked through me. The middle was her DNA was left in me and mine was left in her. And the end was our decision to say, we both felt it, we're not going to act on it. But that end created a new beginning. Because now we had to deal with the fact that we felt something that we were denying. And so it all started up again. Nothing starts until something ends. And it just continues. And when we try and skip a step, I spent my whole life in the middle because I would see something and I would see at the end, I would say, I want to be at the end already. But the middle is where all of life happens. The middle is where all emotion happens. The middle is where everything that is meaningful happens. The middle is where you stop and smell the flower. There's beauty in the middle, but I never saw it because I always knew I always could see the end and I just was impatient and wanted to get there. So I'm particularly interested in what you're saying to me because I know that there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you see a block there that's not allowing that process to happen, I would like you to take off your kid gloves and put on your real gloves and just say, here's what I see when you talked about this, the way you talked about this woman, and then the way, and then you felt this, and then you blocked, that's blocked, and you didn't do that. And I'd like you to fill in those dots for me so I see exactly one place where you're seeing it. So I can really say, oh, did I need to look at that now? But in the outline version of it, my mind doesn't see it. I don't, my heart doesn't feel it. So you don't have to do it, but I would love it if you can, because I just feel you're trying to be nice to me. Call me in it. I'm happy to be called on it.
I don't say it to be nice or to be, certainly don't tend to be nasty. I just is in connection, and I probably don't fully understand it myself. What I sort of get is, you know, I can understand, and sort of something I wanted to connect on is just also later on is in terms of near-death experience, a lightened experience, etc. And actually the language and the energy you talked about, that connection, that, you know, the sort of walking through you. But then everything on top of that feels like a human action, a conscious, you know, we decided so everything else, but yet spiritually, if you want to put it that way, energetically, there was, you know, and I'm aware, you know, is, you know, the two you talked about, love and integrity being, you know, core values for you, but are they not human values? So it's a, like an energetic or a spiritual connection. No different, as you said, that you can feel people for whatever all around the world, but yet then we apply this human belief, this human, so that we can understand it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that explain?
That's a lot clearer. Yeah. And I can tell you that in the situation with the woman whose DNA went from me, I've only known pain since that moment. She ended up suing me. She ended up suing the community that I was a part of. And because of that, and because of my wife got late stage breast cancer and passed away. So it would have been way, everything that's happened indicates that that blockage that you're talking about is there and still is there. It's part of why I still feel comfortable being a big man rather than a healthy man. Because when I was in my healthiest point of view, when I was 165 pounds, bench pressing 345 pounds, running 48 miles a week, something happened that I lost my integrity. Why in the world would I want to have that happen again? Or why in the world would I want to dance with that again? Maybe because I could unblock it this time. But what does unblocking it mean? Does that mean I go through another affair and hurt my wife also now? Does that mean I stand up to my integrity and don't get into affairs? That's what I'm trying to do now. You know, I'm trying to unblock my integrity and have my integrity be my guide and stand and say, you know, this is not the one, this is not what you want to fall in love with. The thing that you can't see is the energy that is yours. It's not mine. It's your mirror image of yourself that you just happen to see me in that. You don't see yourself. That's what you want to fall in love with, not this. My spiritual teacher used to do massive good things for people. And people would come and say to him, we want to thank you so much for all you've done. And he had a big picture of his teacher behind him. And when people would come and say that to him, he would just laugh, not at them. He would just have this big belly laugh. And he said, this is just so funny. He does all the work, pointing to his teacher behind him, and you give me all the credit. There's something very funny about that. Well, I feel the same way with the people that I work with. They do all the work and they give me all the credit. There's something wrong. There's something very funny in that, because they've done all the work. They've looked in the mirror. They've made the changes. They're doing the things that they're doing. Yeah, I'm holding a mirror up for them. That's great. But any wall can do that.
Are they giving you the credit, or are they It's, you know, it's the connection. And that's not, is it to take away from you? You know, gloves off, it's kind of going, is it the connection, the power from you?
Is the connection
through you?
Is the connection through me or apart from me? Is that what you're asking?
I suppose when we don't understand, we go to the nearest thing we do.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
I think probably the closest thing to explain it, because it's a fairly
obscure point.
So, like I say, the connection is to you, but actually, that connection is in some ways, it's not for you to filter. It's not for you to judge. You know, it's a connection on their path.
Yeah. And not but. I think we misunderstand. What's connection to you?
Seeing us all as one energy source.
Okay. So how does that happen for you?
I'm like kindergarten at this now, but okay. I think it is. And, you know, when you hear, when you transcend past the physical voice, even the telepathic voice, as we would maybe call it, I think is just when you feel, it is that gut feeling, you know, which to me, gut feeling and fire in the belly are kind of one and the same. It's a common connection.
Yeah.
It is that, but when you get something that is as of a much, you know, we talk about, you know, in marketing, you talk about super connectors, you know, just some people just have a connection far greater, and not to diminish you, but it's kind of going, is that connection because you have opened up mostly, you know, like 99.9, but there is what feels to me like a point something that gets trapped trying to come through you.
I'm 100% sure that's true. And it's probably more than a 0.1. Mosaic for me showed me what connection is. And I can just give you my definition of it via Mosaic.
Please do.
Most people think this is connection. You and I having a deep, good conversation where we challenge each other, look at each other, give ourselves, you know, some points to think about, walk away feeling inspired by the challenge of it, maybe seeing the world differently. This is actually the fourth step in the process of connection. There are three steps that come before that, which most people don't even realize, don't see, don't know. The first is connection to self. When we're not connected to ourselves, it's pretty impossible to be connected to others, because most of us will walk around from our pains that we feel. And I don't mean to bypass the personality of this. I just want to set a context for it, if that's okay. All right. Most of us feel that we've been hurt so much by life. We've been hurt so much by our own life. Not you haven't hurt me as much as I can hurt myself. I can hurt myself much more than you can, because I know all the places. So I'm doing this all the time, punching myself. Eventually, I'm going to say, hold it, that hurts. So I'm going to do this. I'm going to put up a wall around myself so that you're not punching me in the face. You're punching me on my wall. But look how close that wall is to protect me from me. It's like 2 millimeters from my face. And if I knew I was only going to punch myself in the face, then I could just protect my face. But if I'm not getting through at the face, I'm going to go to my gut. I'm going to go to my groin. I'm going to go to my legs, and I'm going to go to my feet. So over time, that 2 millimeter cylinder that I've put, silo that I've built around myself, now goes from the top of my head to the bottom of my feet. And I walk around in my life with that silo on me. And because I don't want you to think that I'm hiding myself, I paint a pretty good picture of myself on the walls of my silo. And most of us end up thinking that the silo we see of a person is actually who they are, but it's not who they are. They're hiding behind that silo, afraid to death to get hurt. So when I meet you, what happens is my silo meets your silo. We don't really have much connection. We don't really have much into me see, because there's no seeing me at all. When I'm kind to myself, what I realize is if I'm no longer hitting myself, I no longer need a wall to protect myself from myself. So I can now melt this wall down by my kindness. When I do that, I start to go, whoa, look at this world around me. It's like amazing what I'm seeing. Like this world is so much bigger than the world that I thought it was. Like everything about this world is different than the siloed world I was living in. We start to have experiences with energy, with people that we didn't even know were possible. Everything that we believed in the parameter of our 2-millimeter world changes because now the world is wide open to us. As soon as the world becomes open to us, we realize there's something bigger than just ourselves. So there becomes a connection to a source, something bigger. God, source, universe, earth, whatever you want to call it. There's a connection to something bigger than us. And when there's a connection to something bigger than us, it's the practice that that brings. So the practice of connection to self is kindness that melts the walls. The practice of connection to source is being vulnerable, is realizing that there's something else that could be running our world than us. And then when we're willing to let something else steer our boat or our car or our truck or our plane, and we say, hey, hold it. There might be something else that knows this world, knows more about what I'm doing than I. I'm willing to surrender into that. We become vulnerable to go where that takes us. When we realize that there's not just a self, there's a source, and there's something way bigger in the world, we start to wonder, okay, what's our place in this world? What are we doing here? Why were we created? And there becomes the third connection, is the connection to our purpose. When we suddenly have a connection to our purpose, we start to say, whoa, now I understand. I've been created in this moment, in this time, because nobody from the beginning of time till this moment will do what I've been brought here to do in the way that I'm going to do it. And if I do it well, which they're counting on me to do, no one will ever be created from this moment forward to do what I've done, because it's already been done. So I have a really purposeful, powerful place in the continuation of this whole creation that we're making, to play out my purpose, to know my purpose and do that. And we do what we came here to do. That's the practice of the third connection. So when we have kind people who are vulnerable people, who are doing what they came here to do, then we have real connection. Then you and I can sit with each other and say, I know we'll be kind to each other. I know we'll be open to each other. I know we both have a purpose. How do we help each other create that purpose together? And that's when people like Margaret Mead say that throughout all of time, a small group of people have come together and have changed the course of civilization. It doesn't take big crowds. It takes a small group of people, because they're connected to self, connected to source, connected to purpose, connected to each other. And the practice of the fourth connection is building your mosaic. It doesn't mean like-minded people. It means unlike-minded people. It means purposeful people. It means all sorts of people, because the more unlike the people are in your mosaic, the more you would guarantee yourself innovative ideas. Because you'll see the world in different ways. So to me, those four steps of connection are there. Am I master of all four of those steps? God, no. I'm sort of maybe getting a little closer to connecting to myself. I have some idea of what connection to source is. My purpose is changing from moment to moment. So I can't build a house on my purpose yet. If you would have talked to me 5 months ago or 6 months ago or a year ago, I would have said my purpose is to connect people. Now my purpose is to love and accept people, to honor and respect them, to listen to them and hear them, and to acknowledge and validate them. Maybe not that different, but slightly different. And have I built my mosaic, my team? No. I have no idea how that will happen, but I don't know that I have to know how it will happen. I just have to have faith that it will happen. So plug that now into what the place is where I'm blocked, probably every place, because it's not, it's all not put together quite yet. But I go back to each place. I work on my connection to myself. I work on my connection to my source. I work on my connection to my purpose. But when I say work, I don't mean struggle and fight. I mean receive. My work is to just let go of what I think and receive what's there. And if I would have been able to do that with the woman that passed me by on the mark outside my the market, and I would have just received rather than fought, maybe there would have been something different that would happen. In my book, The Mosaic, she reappears. She's the flower girl in my book. Right person at the wrong time. Everybody says it can't happen. But Mo and the flower girl know it will happen. And they hold on to it. And they change destiny. And they create it. Maybe that's my way of saying, I really wish I would have done something different.
Do you feel any... How do you feel about your wife passing?
For a long time, I felt responsible. I felt like I put a stumbling... She married me because she knew I would never have it. I would never be disloyal to her. And I was disloyal to her. And so I felt like I put a stumbling block in the path of a blind person. When I told her I had an affair, 10 months later, she got late stage breast cancer and died the most painful death she could ever imagine. So I carried that burden with me for a lot of years. I was fortunate in the work that I did. I worked at a company called Hay House. And I brought a lot of people to be published at Hay House. Some of the people that I brought were psychics, people who had the ability to see beyond this world to another world. And one of them said to me, will you sit with me and let me just do a reading for you? And they said, do you have any questions? I said, yeah, what's my wife feel like right now? I carry this burden that I killed my wife. I didn't kill her, but I feel like what I did, my actions put her in harm's way. And she chose the socially acceptable way to end the relationship. She couldn't get out and she couldn't go with what she believed. And we had a developmentally delayed daughter and she felt bad. So she just left the world. The woman sat for a few minutes and she said, can I blow your mind? I said, maybe, try. She said, I'm going to tell you, I'm with your wife right now. And I see a completely different story than the one you're telling yourself. I said, wow, tell me. Like I'm trying to say to you, tell me, fill in all the, like I'm completely open to that. Like, tell me what's going on. Please tell me. She said, your wife is laughing and laughing and laughing. And she is so proud of the man you've become. She said, she wants me to ask you a question. I said, please, what you want? She wants to know if you're different now than you were before you had the affair. When you were with your wife, are you a different man now than you were then? And I said, God, even a stone would be different, from all the stuff that I've gone through as a result of that. And she said, she wants to know, do you feel like you're a better man now than you were before? I said, 1,000%. And she said, so this is what's interesting, my friend. Here's what your wife wants you to know. She came into your life knowing, because you both talked about it, that you would go through this test in time. She knew that you would betray her. She knew that she would go through the pain of her cancer. She knew that she would go through the most painful death possible. And she knew it would only happen for a little time in the span of all of time. And she knew you would become a better man through it. And she loved you so much that she was willing to do all of that so that you could become the man you are today rather than the one you were then. She is so proud of you, so happy for you, so happy for the role that she played in your life, so happy that she could have been there for you and helped you through this. You think she's mad at you. There could be no further reality than the one she's showing me and the one that you're presenting to me. You just don't see it the way it is. Try her reality on and see what you feel. From that moment on, I have loved my wife in a way that I never loved her before. And if you look in the mosaic, she is part of the flower girl too. Because that love transcends parallel realities. That love exists even when we can't be in the same world together. I've learned to love my wife in a way that I could never learn to love her here. Because can you imagine the love that someone would have for somebody to go through all of that to help them become a better person? That's what I strive for now. That's why I put myself in harm's way with people. Because I want to be what my wife showed me is possible for a man to be.
I'm conscious of time, Donnie.
Yeah. I think I've been saved by the proverbial bell.
In one or two words, what's your fire in the belly?
What is my fire in the belly in one of two words? I'll say what comes above. I probably is not the perfect word, but probably is a good one. Compassion. Just to have compassion for myself, compassion for others. After telling that story of my wife, it'd be so easy to think how mad she could be and how upset she could be with me for betraying her. But that's not what she felt. And I think that wasn't just given to me. That was given to me so that I could give that to other people, so that other people could give that to other people. Compassion changes everything.
You heard?
I heard. Yeah.
Donnie, where can people reach out to you? Follow right you? Here. Track right you
with
down. You.
Right with you. They can come here every day and we'll talk more together. I love you, brother. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Honestly, it's deep gratitude.
I'm going to send you all my links, but probably the best way is my email, because I check my email all the time. And that's either DanielBruceLevin@gmail.com or ZenseiDanny@me.com. And I'll send you both of those. They can get me on my website. They can get me on Facebook. They can get me on Twitter. They can get me on LinkedIn. They can get me. But like, if you want something, just email me. I welcome you into any of the things that I'm doing. Let's have a conversation in my stranger's room. Let's leave as friends. We had the opportunity, and I love you more now than I did even then. You know, and I really say to you, with all the love of my heart, let's keep it going. I appreciate your questions. I appreciate your insights. And if more comes to you, just let me know.
Appreciate it. We will talk. Donnie, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
My honor. Thank you, brother.
Well, that was another great episode of Fire in the Belly. You know, this really wouldn't be possible without our great guests taking the time to share their personal journeys. And boy, oh boy, sometimes it is personal. It's an absolute pleasure to have that. And then to hear the journeys that people have been on. We've loads more episodes coming up soon. And it's always a pleasure to have guests on. If you do happen to know anyone with true fire in their belly, please reach out to us so we can share their journey, lessons, and successes. So, all that's left to say is have a great day, live with fire in your belly, and be the mightiest version of you.